Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Time now to continue our Aussie Ambassadors series with sports journalist and broadcaster Craig Hamilton. It was September 2000 and Craig was about to undertake the assignment of a lifetime covering the Sydney Olympic Games. It never came to fruition because on the day he was meant to travel to Sydney for the Games, he ended up in a psychiatric hospital. Disoriented and desperate, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, manic depression. After re-evaluating his life and receiving treatment, Craig is now one of Australia's top speakers and advocates for mental health issues. 200,000 Australians are affected by bipolar disorder every year. This is no longer a taboo topic and an imperative to discuss on a program like this. Craig Hamilton, thanks so much for joining us on Open House.
Hi, Lee. It's a pleasure.
Good on you, Craig. Craig, tell us about your life before your breakdown, just before the Olympics.
Well, I came off a dairy farm. I grew up in the Hunter Valley in a town called Singleton. And I thought for a long time that's what I might do for career. My dad was a dairy farmer and I was there until I was 18. And, you know, had a great childhood, played a lot of sport in Singleton, played rugby union, played cricket. A lot of great friends, good family. You know, I don't think anyone has an idyllic childhood. I think that's a myth, but it was pretty good. You know, certainly no complaints. I got a job in Newcastle. My first job out of school was as a coal miner. I came to Newcastle to live. I worked underground in the mines for 16 years. And around about the mid-90s, I got an opportunity to do a bit of radio. You know, it was one of those fork in the road moments. So I got a chance to go on air live and actually do some cricket commentary because I was playing cricket in Canberra in a match. And then I found, gee, I love this, and I could actually do it. I thought, I wouldn't mind doing this for career. And so for the next 6 years, I slowly but surely worked towards that point and got some opportunities along the way with the ABC. Got a job in 1999, and then just before the Olympics in 2000, of course, that's when it all came to a head with a psychotic episode. So, of course, there was a big build-up to that, Lee, and a period of, you know, very severe ill health in the 12 months before that. But still, it came out of nowhere.
Was there something in your life or in your health where depression was evident then?
That's a good question because, you know, hindsight, you know, it's 20/20 vision. I can look back at the years back even to my teenage years and I can now and could at the time post-2000 recognise the signs of mild depression periodically. At the time, you don't know what it is. You just, you know, you feel flat for a period of weeks. You feel tired. You feel restless. You feel anxious. You know, motivation goes. And I can recognise there were periods of time, even through my teens, that was the case. But I didn't for one moment stop and think, hey, there's an underlying problem here. There's an illness here. It was just life, and that was the way it was. It wasn't until the symptoms became extreme just before the Olympics or the 12 months prior that there was a recognition that, gee, there is a problem here.
Have you thought about this question? To what extent was this your health, like just what you're like? To what extent was it your circumstances?
Another good question. Look, I think there's an element of both of those things in this. And you can't review a situation of mental ill health or physical ill health, for that matter, and not look at the big picture. I don't think you can narrow it down to one thing. Certainly my lifestyle was not one that was conducive to good mental health. I lived at a breakneck speed. I had very little downtime. I didn't have an off button. I didn't have an ability to say no to requests to do things, both at work and also away from work. If someone wanted something done, you know, they would ask, and I just felt incapable of saying no. I've got too much on my plate. So I quite often overloaded my work schedule. no relaxation, didn't worry too much about what I ate diet-wise, drank too much alcohol. There was certainly a binge drinking factor in there, which, you know, I enjoyed those times, but they were counterproductive. I can see that now. So the style of life, you know, the lifestyle I was living didn't help. There's no doubt about that.
Can I ask you about one particular episode where you stumbled upon a church in the middle of the night? Tell us about that one, Craig.
Well, that's when I hit rock bottom, yeah. Which, you know, I still see that as a watershed moment. There's a lot of watershed moments in this story, but the period of time up to the Sydney Olympics, and I think most people who have heard my story or heard me speak about the story, they might have read interviews. They look at that episode of psychosis and mania on the train station, which saw me hospitalised, as the defining moment of the story. But prior to that, almost from the beginning of 2000, so in January we're talking, right through until July, so a seven-month period, I was in the grip of a very serious depression, which just got worse and worse. It was untreated. For a significant period of that time, it was undiagnosed. And being an Australian male, I certainly didn't tell anyone I was feeling like that. I didn't share the fact that I was really struggling. I just continued to try and work on with it. And the day I ended up outside the church was when I was at rock bottom. I wasn't sleeping at all. I was severely depressed. I was suicidally depressed. And I got out of bed, I can remember, at 4 o'clock in the morning because I couldn't sleep. I had huge anxiety. And what I'd always done, Lee, to minimise stress or to relax in a way, was to exercise. That was and so I decided I'd go for a run at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I had nothing in the tank. I simply had no energy to do this physically, and I only ended up about 300 or 400 metres away from the house in a terrible state. I was, I was crying. I'd completely broken down. Ended up in front of this church. I thought, well, I'll go in. And of course, the joint was locked. As it was, I said a prayer at that moment, and I'd never really said a prayer before. Not one from. This was from right down from a soul that was screaming out, and it was pretty basic. It was, God, I don't know whether you're there. I'm not sure. I don't know whether you exist, but if you do, I'd like some intervention, and I need it now because I've got nothing left. I've heard of people talk about the moment they surrender and just throw their attempts to control their lives and control their world or hand it over to someone else or to something else, something outside themselves. I suppose that was that moment, because I think for a lot of us, we assume that we can control so much of our lives, and we spend an enormous amount of energy,
yes,
trying to do that.
Yep.
And when you're desperate and things aren't working, and every place you go to try and change your situation doesn't work, that just came from nowhere. When I was 37 years of age, I'd never been one who'd said a lot of prayers, to be frank, but I said one that day because I'd been down every other road, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah.
It made you feel better?
That's a good question, because I suppose I felt a bit of a release, yes. I think that's true, because it had come from so deep within me. It was like unburdening myself in some ways. Mm. I still went home afterwards. I was still in a terrible state. The next day wasn't a great day either, and the day after wasn't, but slowly but surely things did turn around. And I've got to also say, at this period of time, I'd only just started medication for depression. I hadn't been on any medication up until that time, and it took a while to work as well, but all these things happened within a couple of weeks.
What happened on the train station?
Well, the train station became the other side of the depression, and that was a manic explosion and a psychosis. And just to fill in very briefly the gap between that depression, from that time outside the outside the church till the day I was on Broadmeadow Railway Station was probably a time frame around 5 or 6 weeks. And in that time, my mood had shifted from depression very slowly but surely into an elevated state, into mania and then psychosis. And I was delusional. I was high, extremely high, and became psychotic on the train station. I was ready to get on a train. I had a media pass around my neck to go and work in Sydney on the Games, and I didn't get there. I became verbally aggressive, verbally abusive, and the police were called, which is generally what happens when someone's in that state. And I was picked up by the police, and thankfully they were used to this situation. And even today, Lee, the nature of mental health crisis, when mental health crisis happens, then the police are still the first port of call. And they understood that, hey, this was a mental health issue, and they took me straight to psychiatric hospital in Newcastle, where I was diagnosed pretty quickly with bipolar disorder. You know, all the dots joined up, and that was the diagnosis.
And on the way to the Sydney Olympics to be a reporter there at the worst possible time.
All the best possible time.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Depends how you look at it. And I choose to look at it, you know, in the latter. I think the latter situation's the truth. It happened at the best possible time because my life, and yes, there's an underlying illness there. There was the circum. You know, everyone, I think, in their life, Lee, has a default position. When their life becomes too stressful, they'll either become unwell physically or mentally. And, you know, my default line was a mental health issue. And I think had the events not happened at Broadmeadow Railway Station, it could have been far worse. I could have been on the train on my way to Sydney. I could have got off that train in Sydney where I was. No one would have known who I was. At least I was known in Newcastle. Someone could say, hey, that's, you know, that's Craig Hamilton. He's not normally like this. This is way out of character for him. There's obviously a problem here. He's not well. Had I got off in Sydney and behaved the way I was behaving on the station in Newcastle, then, you know, anything's possible. Anything could have happened.
That's a good point. So you spend time in hospital and then emerge from it. How long did that process take?
Well, I was in hospital for 12 days. I watched the Sydney Olympics from the psychiatric ward in Newcastle.
How'd that make you feel?
Well, for the first week I was in there, I was still so high that I didn't think I was unwell. And for anyone with bipolar disorder, they'll tell you that who's ever had a manic high, you feel fantastic. You're literally walking on air. So for the first week, it didn't really hit me that I wasn't there and I was supposed to be. By the end of the first week, I had plans of going down and working on the Olympics for the second week. You know, I thought, oh, this is just an aberration. This is just a hiccup, little hurdle. I'll get myself out of here and I'll get down to Sydney. But that, of course, that didn't happen. So it really, I suppose it dawned on me when Cathy Freeman won her gold medal in the 400. And I was watching that on television in the psych ward in Newcastle. I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to get there. This dream's over. And I suppose I was, you know, angry and very disappointed for a period of time. It did take me a while. It took me months to get over that. But then I realised, and of course the next 12 months were difficult because I didn't know whether that was... I was very uncertain times through that next 12 months as I came to terms with the fact that I had a serious mental illness. That... there was acceptance. That was the next thing, and then I moved forward. And I thought, well, you can either kick the toys out of the cot here, or you can pick yourself up and do something with the experience. And that's what I've chosen to do.
And that's through a combination of both treatment and medication,
and lifestyle change. An attitude change. I've had a range of, you know, I've looked into the holistic area of treatment. I've embraced things like yoga, meditation. I eat a lot differently. I've removed alcohol from the equation. That took some time. Certainly, since 2000, I only consumed alcohol moderately. But in the last couple of years, it's just gone from the landscape altogether. And I must admit, I feel much better for that. The way I live today is significantly different to the way I lived my life pre-2000.
Is your bipolar under control?
Well, that's a good question too, because I've had some relapse episodes in the last 12 years. It'll be 13 years in September since I was diagnosed.
Yes.
I had an episode with a high again, which saw me hospitalised in 2007. And I had an episode again in 2010, late 2010, which saw me hospitalised again. And, you know, with this illness, you can't take your eye off it. You can't become complacent with it. And if you drop back into old patterns of behaviour and old attitudes and, you know, you just assume you're okay, then it's one of these things that will jump out of the ground and bite you again. And it has. But the short answer to your question, in the past 2.5 years, I've been very well, and I intend to stay that way.
Good on you. And even more than that, you have become a spokesperson for mental illness, which I'm sure has been a really gratifying and important thing to do for the benefit of many people.
Well, I'd like to think so.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's true.
I know it's true because I get wonderful correspondence.
Yeah.
And I meet some fantastic people. I've spoken around Australia in the last 7 or 8 years, all sorts of different places, in capital cities, in big conferences, big corporate conferences, or community forums where there's 200 people in a small country hall in outback Queensland, New South Wales, WA. The opportunities to go and speak have been there, and the stories. It's amazing, Lee. You tell your story. And you tell it warts and all, and you paint a picture, and you say, this is my experience, and this is what I've learned from that experience, and this is what I intend to do with that experience, then people will tell you their story. And it's incredibly empowering, because for a lot of people, you're the first person that they've ever shared the story with.
Yes.
You know, you can meet someone who's 45 years of age, who's 60 years of age, and they'll say, that happened to me when I was 25, or that happened to me when I was 36. And they've never told anyone. They've ended up in hospital, really acutely unwell. They've been discharged. They've got on with their lives, and they've never actually, been able to share or felt comfortable sharing the nitty-gritty. And when someone does that, it's fantastic.
I'm sure. Was it a challenging thing and a confronting thing to so expose yourself by telling your story, warts and all, early on?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember the first thing I did publicly was for a newspaper, a lift out in Newcastle for Men's Health, and I just talked about it. I was asked would I do an interview about it, and I did it reluctantly, but I thought, nah, look, I'm not the only one who goes through this. I said, actually, depression's quite common. I knew that by that stage. And so I did the interview, and from there, things, not snowballed, but went from, can you come and speak here? Will you do this? And then there was a request from Random House to do a book. And that's when it really started to escalate in terms of public awareness, and that we've got a guy here who's an advocate and he will speak. But early on, certainly, it was difficult because it was a really difficult time. It's the most challenging thing I've ever been through.
I've got no doubt. Craig, if there are people listening tonight who are struggling perhaps in the early stages of some depression or who are in the midst of it now, are there things that you would say to them?
Well, the number one thing I would say would be to share your experience with someone. don't try and do it alone, because I did for 6 or 7 months, and I got to the absolute rock bottom, which I've described. And when you're suicidal, there's not far to go from there. I mean, that's pretty much down the bottom of the barrel. And I'd got to that point, and no one knew. I was carrying that around, and no one in the world knew about it. And that gets dangerous when you get to that stage. And I think that's how suicide happens in Australia. It happens anywhere when no one else knows. But the families, the communities are left to pick up the pieces. And it's, it's just the cost in human terms is huge. So I would say to someone, even if it's a mild depression, get some intervention early. Go and talk to your doctor. Go and talk to a counsellor, a friend, a family member, someone who you can that you trust, that you can share the story and say, "Look, I'm really struggling here," and then you're bringing in a support base, and I think that's incredibly important.
I'm sure that's great advice. Craig Hamilton, I'm so glad you've joined us on Open House. And if you're interested, Craig's actually written two books. One, Broken Open, and the second one that he released last year is A Better Life. Craig, thank you so much indeed, and congratulations on a wonderful role that you now play today.
Thank you very much, Lee. It's great to talk to you, mate.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.